This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon, coming up in about 30 minutes' time from ESPNDallas.com. Richard Durrett is going to join us to talk about the Dallas Stars. A little bit later on in the show, Frank Provenzano, the former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars and now an ESPN insider for ESPN.com, is going to join us. He's a regular guest on this program. And Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch is going to join us. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve is where you can find us on Facebook. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. I will make note early on in the program that in the final hour, we are going to open up the phone lines to hear from you about your Winnipeg Jets and who you think should come back in terms of the unrestricted free agents. You know, do you want to see head coach Paul Maurice return? His contract's up at the end of the year. So we will open up the phone lines in the final hour of the program and hear from you, get your opinions on the record regarding your Winnipeg Jets. Of course, we start last night with the Jets and the New York Rangers, a game at the MTS Center, where the Jets' losing streak has now been extended to 6 games as the Jets fall at the hands of the New York Rangers by a 4-2 margin. Richie, as he, you know, the Jets, obviously, you know, they were up 2-1 at the point in the first period, and they had a lot of the momentum going with them, and then, you know, Andre Pavlik gives up a weak goal, short side, so in the first period. They go after 20 minutes, it's still 2-2. But did you guys find that second goal for the Rangers, after the Jets had a fair bit of the momentum and they had a decent amount of control of the play of the game, did you think that was a turning point in last night's 4-2 loss to the Rangers?
I did. And when a goal is scored like that, the way it was scored, with Marty St. Louis coming out of the penalty box, he had that penalty, the hooking penalty, towards the end of the second period. And the fact that, again, the Jets, and we've talked about this a lot, really, over the first 3 seasons since the Jets have been back, the power play just doesn't seem to give them a boost, Richie. And it's the same old situation for the Jets, where they aren't able to convert the power play. They have an opportunity, really, to go up 2 goals again. And again, you look at this game, and the Rangers are a good team, and you can make a strong argument this is a better team, and they're better than their current position would indicate. But again, the Jets are at home, and they're playing pretty well. They're not in control of the game, but they're still in a position where they can win. And that goal is an absolute killer. And we know that Bogo didn't pick up Carl Hagelin, and it was really a goal that deflated the team. The game's still tied at that point, but it's one of those goals that you just think, okay, now the life is completely out of the Winnipeg Jets, and you could see kind of the momentum turning in that game after that goal.
Yeah, you know, I think the performances lately, some of them haven't been that bad. Like last night's game on surface wasn't that bad. They put some shots on the board. They did carry the play for periods of time. But I thought it was just a lack of desperation. The team knows they're out of it. That's what I thought last night. They play like a team that knew they were out of it. And this team, like they have seemed to do for 3 years, is when they have an opportunity to pack it in, they do. So, I mean, last night, 2-2, allow a poor goal at the end of the second period, and probably a little bit of a misread by Trouba, but more so a significant misread by Zach Bogosian, who basically admitted as much after the game.
Sorry, I should clarify, that was the goal that put them up. I said it was the goal that tied. Hagelin's goal actually did put them up. So
yeah, it was the second goal of the game, as in, because they changed the first goal from
Kreider's goal was actually a pretty nice goal. I mean,
Montoya should have had that.
Yeah,
but I mean, you know, and Pavlik should have had
First Hagelin goal.
Kreider goal, and then the Hagelin fourth goal Montoya should have had. But both goals, you know, even Lundqvist led in a short side goal yesterday. So what can you do? But back to the point of, you know, it's about execution. And at the end of the period, you let that kind of back-breaking goal, and then you come out, and Zach Bogosian, who not only does he, you know, make a mistake on that play, comes out early penalty in the third period. You know, it's a focus issue, and it's a... And then the Rangers kind of, you know, took the play a little bit and knew they had the lead and could dictate the pace. I thought they did a pretty good job of keeping a good pace last night, the Rangers did. And that's what happened. I mean, it's kind of the same old story. I mean, how many times can we talk about this being the result? Some good things, probably more bad than good, another loss, and another season out of the playoffs. And that's what it is at the end of the day. Now, there certainly has been development of certain things that you have to be happy with. I'm sure we'll talk about this throughout now to the end of the season, throughout the offseason, into next season. Paul Maurice, we don't know whether he comes back, but the job he's done in terms of, I think, instilling a defensive conscience and a little more structure into the game has done a good job. I think now the young players, you know, Scheifele's come around way quicker than I thought he would. Trouba's been a tremendous rookie. But, I mean, what else really has happened this year that you have to build on and say, hey, well, this team is going the right direction. We don't know what the prospect, everybody keeps talking about the prospect pool. That's the topic of the day now. We don't know anything about the prospect pool. I don't think anybody knows about the prospect pool aside from the Jets and guys who know the prospects in the National Hockey League, which is not a high number. So we don't know what those guys are going to be. So what this team is going to be, interesting to see and the changes that happen. That's why we're going to open the phones later. The changes that happen throughout the next, once the season's over, once we get to the draft, because this group as it's currently constructed is not good enough.
Right, and when you talk about the prospects, the Jets definitely have a good group of prospects, and the 2013 draft, I would say, was the best draft year so far, and the 2011 and 2012 draft years were also good draft years. But as you mentioned, Richie, there's a finite amount of spots for prospects next year, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but you can't expect three or four players to come in from any one of those draft classes, because sure, it's nice to see, for example, Adam Lowry's development in St. John's, or it's nice to see a guy like Brendan Kitchen who went back into the draft. It's nice to see that, but really when you think about it, the Jets have a fair amount of guys that are signed not only next year, but beyond. So you might have one or two spots, but you'd have to think that's it. So you can talk a lot about prospects, but really, it's still going to be a couple years in St. John's before, like example, Nick Batan, a guy like that. Like, there aren't a lot of spots for players that are coming right out of junior.
Well, I keep going back to something that we talked about. I think we talked about it in post game or off air one day, Richard, and I think it was you and I. We talked about the Los Angeles Kings. They obviously came in here to play Winnipeg last week,
yep.
And they absolutely utterly dominated the Winnipeg Jets.
Mm-hmm.
And the Los Angeles Kings, to your point back then, Richard, was that the Los Angeles Kings spend a little less than $1 million more on their players than the Winnipeg Jets do. And the talent disparity between the Los Angeles Kings and the Winnipeg Jets was significant. And you can go out in free agency, but there's no quick fixes available in free agency. So you're still in the same situation that, barring a significant trade to the top six core of this Winnipeg Jets, it's unlikely that there's going to be much of a difference very quickly. And so, next year at this point in time, you look at the free agents who are available. Is there anybody that's running in that's turning this team around and turning their fortunes around? It seems like it's going to be the same, unless there's a trade made, it seems like it's going to be the same core pieces that haven't been able to get the job done for the last 3 years next year.
Right, and there are players that will become free agents, and we know it's likely that a guy like Ryan Callahan, Vanek, but are those players going to want to come to Winnipeg? We know that Vanek wants to go to Minnesota, and we know that Callahan most likely wants to play for an Eastern American team because he's from that area. So right now, no, it is, and we've heard a lot about this, but it really is all about the draft and development model. Really, you are going to be bringing up a few players next year, and I think in the free agency market, yeah, there's always players that you can acquire, but I don't think you're necessarily going to see, again, a guy like a Thomas Vanek come in, if that's what people are expecting or think that should happen. I just don't see that.
I mean, the squad, the issue that the team has is, we've talked all about, needing to add defensemen and depth on the forward lines and, probably a different goaltender to with Pavlik there. maybe they bring back Montoya, I don't know. Seems like James Reimer might be a guy that might target for somebody who'd make sense, Manitoba boy, some starting experience. And, you know, another top six player, and we'll talk about who they're bringing back and ideally a center bringing in. So there's a lot of work to be done, and I agree that there's a lot of work to be done in the offseason. But, you know, remember that the division they play in is very hard, and it's not getting any easier. You know, Dallas is getting better, young and talented. We'll talk to Richard Dirt of ESPN Dallas later, but you look at the way they're playing. They lost to Calgary last night, but overall been playing really well. Colorado, Chicago, St. Louis, not going anywhere. So it's not an easy, when we're talking, I was talking about this with Rick on the Monday's postgame show. You know, it's a tough division, right? You know, you got Weber and you got Jones and the young defense in Nashville coming through, Rene back next year. So the Jets have to keep up with them. And then it's going to be a dogfight next year as well. I mean, I agree with you on that point, Drew, in terms of it's going to be hard to remake the team. Unless there's going to be a significant trade, it's going to be hard to remake the squad. But, you know, like, you see them now and you see, oh, if they do this and this, that, you know, they're a piece away from this, or they're a goal away from here. But on a fundamental level, they're farther away from that than that one goal or that one thing.
Well, we talk about the Jets prospects, and you know, we got to wait till the prospects come through the system. Mm-hmm. And the prospects are going to mm-hmm. be what, you know, really improves this team. That's assuming assuming facts, not in evidence. There's no guarantee that the prospects pan out as everybody expects or as the scouts would hope that they would. And secondly, that's no guarantee that the other team who also has prospects, that the Jets prospects that come into their lineup are any better than the other team and the prospects that they have or their current players that they have. There's no guarantee that the Jets prospects are head and shoulders above every other team's prospects in their division. And that's sort of, I mean, do I think that Nick Petan is going to turn out to be a quality NHL player? Well, I think he's got talent, and I think he's been able to put up huge numbers in the WHL, and I think that's very impressive, and I think that they probably made a good choice in drafting him in the second round. But do I know for sure that he's going to be able to turn out and be a top six forward? I don't. Nobody does. And there's no guarantee that, you know, and maybe he ends up being a third line player. Well, that's still pretty good, but there's no guarantee that somebody else's second-round draft pick doesn't turn out to be a steal as well.
Right, and I think, going back to what Richie said, I think that there are certain positions that every team, everybody's looking for another solid veteran left-shooting defenseman. Everybody would like to add right. more scoring on the wings. Everybody would like to improve the goaltending situation. But is this going to be the year that those issues are addressed via trade or free agency, or is it going to be another year where you kind of go with what you have and you try to bring in one or two of the prospects that you have? Again, there is a chance that, for example, a Josh Morrissey, a Nick Petan, an Adam Lowry, a Kitchen, it's possible that these guys make the team, because what happens in the NHL is if a player really impresses in the preseason, they make the team. Ole Matta, people forget this, and we've talked to Mike Colligan, who we always have on to talk Penguins. He was not supposed to make the team. Not only has he made the team, he's one of the top defensemen on a team that is favored to win the Eastern Conference. So players can impress and make it, Drew, but you are right in the sense that you can't just depend on that, because at this point, you need to fill other roles with players that have NHL experience, I would say.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look ahead to tomorrow night's game against the Dallas Stars. I mean, they've been must-wins for probably a week now, and they haven't been able to do it. Tomorrow night is really the ultimate of the must-win games. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
20 minutes past 12 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether you're an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must. It's also an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. jetsnow.com. Gentlemen, a couple roster notes coming in from Jets practice. They had a skate today, and head coach Paul Maurice with an availability. Looks like Andre Pavlik is going to be out at least for the next two games with a lower body injury. Al Montoya gets the start tomorrow night against Dallas, and the Jets will be recalling Michael Hutchinson from the St. John's Ice Caps. He's been absolutely dynamite for the Ice Caps over the last really 6 to 8 weeks when the Ice Caps have just been on a tremendous hot streak. So Hutchinson will be the backup for the Winnipeg Jets. Al Montoya gets the start tomorrow night against the Dallas Stars, and then presumably as well Monday against the St. Louis Blues, as the Jets are in a back-to-back situation. Tomorrow night, Jets and the Stars, we've sort of had this game circled on our calendars for a while now. And 2 weeks ago, this game was meant a lot more. 2 weeks ago, when the Jets and the Stars were really tied for the final playoff spot, the final wild card spot in the Western Conference, this was going to be one of the biggest games, for the Jets at MTS Center since they've returned. Now, fast forward 2 weeks, a six-game losing streak, albeit one where they've managed to earn 3 points. The Jets are now 6 points behind the Dallas Stars. Stars still have two games in hand. Dallas, or the Calgary Flames, did the Jets a favor last night by beating Dallas in a shootout. So the Jets, and then when you factor in the tiebreaker for which the Jets trail the Dallas Stars, they're really 7 points behind the Dallas Stars. I think if you went around this room, we would say that it's the Jets' chances of making the playoffs are slim to none at this point in time. But if they lose tomorrow night to the Dallas Stars, I think it's clear to say they are definitely none, not even slim to none anymore.
Right, and you're right, Drew. And the Dallas Stars, it's miraculous that the Calgary Flames were able to come back yesterday, but the Calgary Flames actually did the Jets a service and kind of gave them a little bit more life. But let's be honest here, and the Jets know this, and everybody knows this, with 14 games left because of this recent slide, and it's obviously unfortunate, the Jets will have to go 12-2, 13-1. That's what you're looking at. If you think that the playoffs, you're going to need 96 points, the Jets are at 69 points right now. So
it's over, man.
It's extremely difficult. So now you mentioned the game tomorrow, coming up tomorrow night against the Dallas Stars, and then they have another game against Dallas coming up too. Two games coming up against Dallas. Those would have been very important games. And sure, the Jets are still going to prepare for this game and try to win this game, but you have to be realistic in that the amount of points required is basically impossible. You can't get into the playoffs with that road trip coming up, and you don't ever want to say never, right? But you still have to try to win these games, but you know that it's basically going to take nothing short of a miracle to actually get in.
Yeah, I mean, let's call it how it is. The Jets are 7 points back of Dallas, if you include the tiebreaker, as you mentioned, Drew. So they're 7 points back, with two games in hand that Dallas has, with Vancouver, who looks awful, and Phoenix, who doesn't look that bad, in the way. It's done. With their schedule they have and the road trip they have to California, it's done. You got to play for pride now, and you got to bring it. I mean, Dallas will bring, you'd hope, a desperate team in Winnipeg tomorrow night. You have to hope that. That's the thing that I have, like, since the Islanders game, which they did not execute well, And
that was a must-win game for them, considering that Tavares is out and all that.
They're sitting Vanek, and they traded McDonald, or they're sitting McDonald and Vanek.
Yeah, yeah, they traded McDonald that day.
McDonald that day, and they're sitting Vanek. But the point is that, you know, they haven't played a desperate team. They haven't looked like a desperate team to me enough. And even last night, you know, if you're going to say, if Andrew Ladd's going to say that they're not done, then play with a certain desperation. I didn't see it. I didn't see a team that knew they were on their last playoff legs. I saw a team that thought they were out. That's my personal opinion. So tomorrow you got to bring it, and against a Dallas team that's quick, that can skate, and is very good in transition. And by that you mean if you turn the puck over, it goes defense to offense with speed attacking you quickly, and you're in trouble. And Tim Thomas is going to start tomorrow. I just read that. Tim Thomas is going to start, according to the Dallas Morning News. Lennon's on the way back, practice today.
Yep.
So that's a benefit for the Jets, because Tim Thomas, you know, isn't what he once was. He's not a bad goalie, but isn't what he once was. And Kari Lennon's a great goalie, as far as I'm concerned. So you're going to draw Tim Thomas. You have a Dallas defense that's not great. Their forwards, as a 12, are very nice, because you got guys who play roles. Antoine Roussel, Ryan Garber. The guys know what they're supposed to do. It's that old NFL saying in hockey, saying, do your job. And I think Dallas does a really nice job of having their players do particular jobs. Sagan, Ben, Nikushkin, score. You know, I need the guys at the bottom of the roster, Horkov, those guys to check. And when you have Horkov and you have Cole and you have Whitney, and we talked about that on Thursday's show.
Horkov won't play tomorrow, but keep going.
You have those two guys in out of the three. You have a foundation in there of veterans who've gone to the Stanley Cup Finals or won the Cup. Whitney's won a Cup. Cole won the Cup with Carolina, I believe, or was he with Edmonton that year? I'm trying to remember. I think Cole won the Cup with Carolina.
He did.
Yeah, and then and Whitney won the Cup, and then Horkov got to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final against Carolina. So you have guys who've been there.
Not to mention Sagan.
Sagan, too. But, I mean, the veteran guys.
Yep.
But, yeah, and the guys, young guys with experience. Yep. So they have a nice mix there. You have to be able to watch their speed, and that means the neutral zone play is going to be very important tomorrow. How the Jets take away that space in the neutral zone. If you remember the game the Dallas played here earlier in the year.
Jamie Benn with a hat trick.
But they just...
No, I'm wrong about that. Sorry.
No, Sagan was dominant. I think Sagan had 4 points. But the point is, they just completely dominated the neutral zone. The Jets, they went through the neutral zone unimpeded and were able to create chance after chance. You can't have that tomorrow. You want to slow down the pace against Dallas. I know the Jets have a tendency to take on the pace of the other team, meaning slow, then they'll play slow. Fast, they'll play fast. Tomorrow, you don't necessarily want to play fast with this Dallas team because... they have more top-end talent. I think they have better forwards than the Jets do. Jets have better talent on defense. And then, I mean, the goalies, Montoya, Thomas, probably, that's probably a wash. But that's where you got to watch.
The neutral zone, like you said. I mean, the Jets, I thought, in the first period yesterday against the Rangers, did a good job of not letting the Rangers get much speed through the neutral zone. The second Jets goal, the Andrew Ladd goal, was set up on a turnover in the neutral zone.
Right, yeah.
And then Ladd came down the wing. And, I mean, that's probably a goal that Henrik Lundqvist saves more often than not.
Fair.
But you don't... And I remember that game against Dallas where Sagan and Ben were just outstanding. And I remember they would hit the blue line, the Jets blue line, and they had room. And they had speed.
That's right.
And when those guys have room and speed, you're asking for trouble because they are top 20, top 15 forwards in the NHL.
And all it takes, and this goes for any team in the NHL, this goes for any team, this can happen. If you have a lapse in the way you're playing, the lapse on defense, teams will bury you. And that goes to what Richie was saying in that Dallas game that was on a Saturday afternoon, I remember. And there's so many weapons. Sagan, Ben, and Nikushkin is just one of the most dangerous lines in all of hockey. These guys, what they can do with the puck, they're fast, they've got size. Nikushkin and Ben are big, and Sagan's small up the middle, and you just can't really make mistakes. You have to play them, you have to bring physicality, and, you know, Richie mentioned the defense. The defense is probably the weakness, even though, I got to say, I know Richie likes Brendan Dillon too. I really like Jordy Ben. Jordy Ben doesn't get enough credit. Jordy Ben's an interesting story. He was never signed and played in the BC Junior, second tier league, and he's really come up with Jamie Benn, and he's turned into a top four defenseman for them. So it's a group that doesn't necessarily have any superstars. They don't have a PK Subban or Erik Karlsson. But these guys are, for the most part, work really well together.
Move the puck pretty well.
They move the puck pretty well. They're kind of more of a workmanlike defensive type of group. But this line, though, is dangerous. I know that they have some injuries. Horkov is out, and I believe Cody Eakin is out as well.
Well, and then Peverley, who I also should have mentioned for veteran influence who won a cup, he's out, obviously.
And Peverley's out as well. So, I mean, even though the Jets right now are... looking at the Dallas Stars and what they have to do is nearly impossible. I think we've all agreed they still have to compete and try to beat this team because the Jets have now not gotten a win, only one regulation win in their last 10 games. So this is a big win for them. It's not just for the playoffs. It's just for the team's overall pride and all of that. So, there's an opportunity for them to get back on the right track here.
There is an opportunity. I mean, from a Jets fan's perspective, and we'll have to go to break in a couple minutes, but from a Jets fan's perspective, I think the problem that they have, or that the Jets fans would have, is they look at the last six games that they've all lost. And they've probably played to their potential in one of those games. I would say the Colorado game.
Yeah, they thought they played pretty well in that game.
And they probably deserve to win that game,
yeah,
I would think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But the other games, I mean, you play like that against the Islanders on that Tuesday night, you win.
They didn't play well against Ottawa.
Yeah.
Yeah, you play like that against Ottawa, you probably win. You play like that against Vancouver, you already win.
I agree.
You win.
You're talking about right there is three non-playoff teams, guys.
That's right. And you see it. Like, there's no reason why they should have played that way against Colorado, but not against Ottawa, mm-hmm. Long Island, and Vancouver.
That's right.
And, you know, just play to your potential, and it's a different story, and you are still in, you know, add another 6 points to the Jets' point total right now.
That's a whole different ballgame, isn't it?
It is. And that's just it. I mean, people say, well, you know, that Denver game, yeah, we lost in overtime, but man, did we play good against a Colorado team that has really been up at the top of the Central Division all season long.
And again, you know, you're going to go back to that Scheifele injury. Give me a break. Give me a break. Because look at this Dallas team. You mentioned the injuries they've faced. We talked about the other teams and the injuries that they face. Excuses. Take the excuses. Throw them out the window. From a Jets fan perspective, quickly, Drew, on this game tomorrow, we talk about Dallas and their speed and their transition. It's going to be a matchup game. We've talked about Dallas previewing the Jets against them before. What pairing are they going to put up against Sagan, Nikushkin, and Ben? And what forward line are they going to try and match up against them? Because I don't think any of the pairings that they have can shut that line down.
It'll be interesting because they've never played against Dallas with Bufflin as a forward.
Right, but I mean, that's... He wasn't going to shut him down either.
No, I know.
So, I mean, so can anybody shut him down on the defense? And then what forward line do they use to match up against this line? Because Dallas, if you can shut them down, you got a nice shot. But are you going to put Bogosian and Enstrom? I've been struggling a bit. Are you going to put Trouba and Stewart? Can Stewart handle the speed and transition of this team? It's a tough matchup. So you have to make sure the forwards, too. You know, you're probably going to be one of those five-man unit jobs mm-hmm. to shut down one of the best lines in hockey, and that will soon, I think, be the best line in hockey.
Well, the job of shutting down that line probably does start in the neutral zone with a good, yes. effective trap to not let them have the speed. And that starts with the forward group.
And no turnovers, so that's another thing.
Sure.
Like, you know, the trap's a factor, but it's, you know, how do you turn the puck over as? Do you force passes? Do you force it at the blue line? Or do you get it in deep? Against that line, I don't mind, certainly mind the creativity against different lines. You know, other lines aren't going to kill you as much in transition. So...
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about head coach Paul Maurice and his future as the Winnipeg Jets head coach. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hey. The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN 1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from ESPNDallas.com, Richard Durrett. Richard, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
How are you guys?
We're doing very well. How about yourself?
Good, good.
Good, glad to hear that. Richard obviously brought you on to talk about the Dallas Stars, the Jets' opponent, tomorrow night at MTS Center here in Winnipeg. Before we get to that game, we have to look back at the scary incident earlier this week involving Rich Peverly. Obviously a frightening incident, but one that seems as though it's going to have a happy ending at the end of it, obviously thanks to the quick actions of the medical staff on site at the America Airlines Center in Dallas. How has the Dallas Stars team been dealing with that incident involving Rich Peverly?
Yeah, I think they've done a pretty good job of dealing with it. It's not an easy situation. It's unusual. You just don't see that. Peverly was a guy that's well-liked by his teammates, an integral part of the team. And to see a guy skate to the bench and then collapse, and if you're sitting on the bench and he's collapsing in front of you, it's scary. You're unsure of what to do. The fact that they had a protocol in place, and a lot of that's mandated, by the way, by the NHL. So the NHL deserves some credit for having some of this already in place. But they practiced and rehearsed for these kinds of circumstances. What if somebody hurts their neck on the ice and can't move? What if they can't get off the ice? What if they get to the bench, and then once they get to the bench, they have a problem? you know, how do they get them from the ice or from the bench into that tunnel where they're able to quickly work on them. They knew exactly what to do. It could have been really scary had they not been able to do all of that, because what happened is his heart raced, and then his heart stopped. And it didn't stop for very long. The doctors think a matter of seconds before CPR was started to be administered, and once that was done, they were able to come in with the rest of the equipment. They did have to use a defibrillator one time to successfully get the heart beating again, and at that point, Peverly was talking. So it was a very scary moment, but it had a good ending in that they quickly revived him. Further tests showed that there was nothing more abnormal besides the condition that he was already going through, that AFib. And so now he'll go to Cleveland and have surgery, but it just means it's the end of hockey for this year. And we'll see if it's the end of hockey, period, for Rich Peverly. I don't know. They did not want to say that this week, but certainly it's the end of the season.
And he was at the game last night, Richard, so you know it seemed like he got a standing ovation from the crowd there. How is he doing overall with, obviously, this scary experience?
Yeah, he has not talked to the media at length about any of this. He read a statement on Wednesday, and then he saw his teammates at practice on Thursday. I was there for the Wednesday news conference and then was there Thursday, and I was actually in the building last night just to see the reaction, and he did get a standing ovation. What they did is they thanked the doctors, you know, just on the video board, thanked everybody at UT Southwestern Medical Center, which are where the doctors are stationed, and then they showed Peverly on the video board. He was sitting in a suite, and of course he got a huge hand. He waved to the crowd, and it was a nice moment. Both teams, Calgary and the Stars, at their benches were banging their sticks against the board. So just kind of a nice moment, not overdone. They did it during the first TV timeout, and just to give everybody a chance to sort of see Peverly in the arena. And I think that was important, and probably important for him to get back in the building. He hadn't been there since the collapse, so maybe there was something that benefits Peverly just from having gone through that experience, at least getting that one out of the way too.
Richard, we wanted to talk to you about Jamie Benn, because he's really become a fan favorite of the show, especially Richie, who's been a big fan of Jamie Benn's, and it's been great to see his development with the Dallas Stars and also Team Canada at the Olympics. Have you noticed a change in his performance or a change in his overall demeanor since he won gold with Canada at the Olympics?
I don't know if I would say that, because, and maybe that's because we're a little bit spoiled down here. We get a chance to watch this guy on a nightly basis almost to do what he does. But I think there is a level of confidence that naturally comes with performing on that kind of stage. Jamie Benn has not played in a postseason game in the NHL. So this is the closest that he's been, is to have it be that kind of a situation, that kind of pressure, and to perform the way he did has to be a confidence boost for him. I mean, whether he wants to talk about it or admit it, or get into it in detail, at some level it has to be. But he's been an on-ice leader before the Olympics ever came up. I was surprised he wasn't on the radar screen for the Canadian team longer. A lot of us in Dallas were. It was almost like Team Canada early on. There was a lot of other guys being talked about. But he was a guy that you knew, with the way he was playing, he was going to get himself in a meaningful role on that team once he made it there, and that's exactly what happened. But he's a tremendous player, so much talent, and so young. You know, you look and think, how much better is this guy going to get? He's only going to get better. And you add confidence to the mix inside of kind of the inner belief now that, hey, I can compete at the highest level with the best players in the world on the best hockey team in the world has to do a lot for him.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Richard Durrett of ESPNDallas.com to talk about the Dallas Stars. Richard, we just talked about Jamie Benn, and then you look right next to him, there's that other guy who's had a pretty good season, Tyler Seguin. You look at the top of the NHL scoring leader, fourth overall in points, you know, is Tyler Seguin, obviously acquired from the Boston Bruins in the offseason. You know, is top 10 in NHL scoring where we can expect to find Tyler Seguin, you know, from this point going forward in his NHL career? Is that his ceiling? Is top flight, top 10 scorer in the NHL?
I think he's going to consistently be there. Yeah, I really do. The Stars are going to look back on this trade as being so crucial to finding their way back into contention. You know, it's been a while. Five missed postseasons here. And now the ability to build around a young core. We just talked about a Jamie Benn. You add a Tyler Seguin to the mix, and those two and what they can do on that top line, the ability to score. You know, Seguin, yeah, Seguin came, and there was some baggage in, you know, okay, what, it's a young kid and some of the things that he's been doing. But the bottom line is everybody knew, wow, the bright future this guy had in his ability and just raw talent on the ice. And we've seen it down here. He's just been phenomenal. And what a difference it's made. And he like Ben, I think there's so much room to grow, maybe more so for Seguin, it just in terms of the curve, that he's going to be here for a long time. And I think you're going to see him as a guy that every year you talk about when you say that, okay, who are the top scorers, who are the top guys that make offense happen in the National Hockey League, you're going to hear his name repeatedly.
Richard, you look at the squad. We talk about some of the young talent on this team, but it's a nice mix of veterans, and some are injured right now, but you have Eric Cole, Ray Whitney, Rich Peverly, Sean Horkoff, all with Stanley Cup final or Stanley Cup championship experience. How much of a role do they play in keeping the young players, you know, Chiasson and the players we've mentioned, and some of the young defensemen, you know, even keeled throughout a long season?
I think that was really the biggest point in Jim Nill's decision to acquire some of those players. Because frankly, if you look at the on-ice production of what they're doing, it hasn't been consistent. Mm-hmm. But that's not the point. That's only looking at it as a short-term view or an on-ice view. When you've got a young team, you've got to have veterans in that dressing room that can help lead them. You've got to have guys that can keep them out of trouble. You got to have guys that can show them the way. Alex Chiasson has talked about this with Rich Peverly, and of course that's been a story we've talked about a lot this week, but
right.
You know, Peverly is the guy that would call Chiasson on the road and say, let's go out to eat, or hey, what are you doing you know, right now? Are you doing the things you're supposed to be doing? Young kids need that. And so even on a team with so much young talent, you've got to have those veterans that can come in and sit in that dressing room. And yeah, some of these contracts, are they too much money? You bet they are. But you've got to pay for some of that to be able to sort of teach these guys. And I think the group that you mentioned, have done a pretty good job with the young kids for the Stars of doing that. We may, here in Dallas, we may not see the fruits of that labor for another year mm-hmm. or two. But there's no question they're building something here. You can tell it, you can see it on the ice, and it's just a question of how long it's going to take to get there.
Richard, we wanted to go back a couple of weeks to the NHL trade deadline. What was behind the thought process of trading Stefan Robida to the Anaheim Ducks?
I'll tell you, it was a two-pronged thought process. One was, for everything that Robida has done for this organization, I think the Stars wanted to give him an opportunity to try to go somewhere and have a chance to win a cup. Look, they've made strides this year in Dallas, there's no doubt about it, but this is a team that's just fighting for a playoff berth. It's not a team, as you sit and look at it, that has truly realistic goals of winning a Stanley Cup. And Robida he's grinded it out. He's been terrific for the young kids. He's done everything asked. And I think the other part of that is that the Stars wanted to get something. You know, obviously they're looking at their young core and who they're keeping and who they're not, and they want to try to get something also for Robida. And so Jim Neal went to Stefan Robida and said, look, how do you feel about this? With the understanding, I think, that if Robida just said, look, I don't even want to entertain it, then that would have been the end of it. That would have been the end of the discussion, and no one would have said a word. But Stefan said, oh, yeah, you know what? Look around. And that's what Neil did. So that's really the reason. And I really believe that. I do think there was a genuine want for Neil to give Robida a shot to do something. Comes back from the injury, give him a chance to do something with a team truly in contention for a cup. But that was a huge push, and to get something in return, which they did.
And Richard, between the pipes, was actually watching that game when Kari Lehtinen got completely run over, and surprised there wasn't more discipline handed down, but apparently he skated this morning, and apparently Tim Thomas is going to play here in Winnipeg tomorrow. When can we expect Lehtinen to be back? And I guess the second part of that is, how important has Thomas's acquisition been based on that injury?
Yeah, you know, at the time of the Thomas acquisition, I'll be honest, I thought, it's kind of an interesting move. Not really sure they needed to do that. But, you know, it's a nice insurance policy, and right away, what happens?
Yeah.
You've got to cash in on that policy. He's been real important. He's been solid. He gives them that veteran presence, a guy who knows what he's doing in pressure situations. That clearly helps. And I'll tell you the other secondary thing. Maybe it'll push Kari Lehtinen a little bit. And I'm not saying that's not a shot at Kari, but I think everybody from time to time needs that. You know, it's one thing that, okay, you're the number one goaltender. But to be pushed to stay at the top, to know there's somebody right there, I don't think that will hurt a guy like Kari when he returns. And I do think he's very close. I think it could be, now this is a 3-game road trip the Stars are getting ready to embark on, and maybe during this trip that Kari returns. And then it will be interesting to see what the breakdown is going forward. The other reason for the Thomas acquisition, beyond, you know, what we saw happen to Kari with the injury, was there a lot of back-to-backs, a lot of games squeezed into a limited amount of time down the stretch, and their games and points the Stars are going to have to make the postseason. Mm-hmm. And I think Jim Neal and Lindy Ruff, the coaching staff, wanted to be sure they had a goalie they felt like they could put in there and win a game for them, not just go in there and keep them in it, win a game for them if they really needed to have points, and Thomas gives them that ability. So I think you'll see both these guys play. It may be fairly balanced down the stretch to try to get this team into the postseason.
Richard, we'll let you go on this last question. Like a lot of the untraditional hockey markets, anytime that there's a downturn in the performance on the ice, there's a corresponding downturn in attendance. It seems like with the Stars being more competitive this year and right on the cusp of a playoff spot, or right now in a playoff spot, right on the cusp of a playoff berth, that this team has sort of recaptured the attention of the hockey fan in Dallas, or the sports fan in Dallas. Am I reading that correctly? You know, are the Stars sort of getting back into prominence like they were during their Stanley Cup era?
Well, they're not there. They're not to that prominence yet. And it's because, as you mentioned, they've struggled so much. This is a winner's town. You know, it's a football town first and foremost, mm-hmm. but then it's a winner's
haven't
town.
Had to worry about them winning every recently.
No. And that was my next point, is that, you know, we've had a Cowboys mediocre team that's kind of disappointed the fan base here. The Mavericks are in the playoff hunt, kind of in that seventh seed right now in the Western Conference, but they won a championship a few years ago. Mm-hmm. The Stars had become an afterthought. 5 straight missed playoffs in a town that, frankly, is football and even baseball and basketball before it's hockey. But if you win, boy, they're there. And I think this team has now sparked some interest. I think Jamie Benn going to the Olympics and doing what he's doing helped. I think people are like, oh, yeah, that's the Stars captain. You know, I think there's people who think, Mike Modano getting his number retired on Saturday kind of reminded everybody, man, it was fun when this team was winning Stanley Cups and playing in the Stanley Cup Finals and in contention every year. And then, frankly, the Peverly thing sort of reminded people that, hey, there's a hockey team that's a pretty close-knit family in this town. And I think there's been some fans that have even responded to that. So the Stars' job now is to take advantage of the fact that there are more eyes on them now than there have been in 5 years. And they need to win some games and stay in contention and make this a fun fight to the playoff spot. And even if they get to the playoffs and lose in the first round, just getting there and having, you know, a playoff atmosphere here for the first time in a while will make a huge difference for next year. And that's how you build the momentum mm-hmm. and get the attendance back. So they've got a chance to start it, guys. They've got to kind of cash in on it, though, with their play here in the next few weeks.
Hey, Richard, we lied. We have one more question for you, because for those who don't know, you also cover the Texas Rangers. What's their outlook this year in the AL Central?
AL West.
AL West.
Oh, sorry, AL West, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very competitive AL West now. I mean, Seattle spent a lot of money in the offseason. The Angels have kind of underperformed here the last couple of years, and then the A's have won the division the last 2 years. It's probably going to come down to injuries for Texas. I mean, we've already seen Derek Holland, a stalwart in the starting rotation, go down for half the year. They're not going to start the year with Matt Harrison, who won 18 games for them in 2012. So they've got to have some things break right on the injury front. But they brought in Prince Fielder. They signed Sin-Soo Chu to be their leadoff hitter. They're going to score runs. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch. But it's going to be a difficult division to navigate if they're to try to return to the postseason.
It's unlikely that Ian Kinsler is going to get his wish and that they go 0-162, he said, after the trade to Detroit earlier this offseason.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. And I'll tell you, the end of June is when Detroit comes to Arlington for the first time, and that will be really interesting to see what response Kinsler gets from the fans here. Josh Hamilton said some things last offseason about mm-hmm. how he didn't think the Dallas-Fort Worth-Arlington area was a baseball town. And he caught hell for it. So we'll see if Ian Kinsler does the same from fans when he returns in June.
Richard Durrett covers the Dallas Stars. He also covers the Texas Rangers. He does baseball, he does hockey, he does everything else. Richard, thanks very much for joining us. We appreciate you giving your time.
Okay, anytime, guys. Thanks.
Take care, Richard. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Richard Durrett of ESPNDallas.com. Great interview about the Dallas Stars. In case you missed any of that, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, IllegalCurve.com. A reminder, coming up at 2:15 this afternoon, we're going to open up the phone lines to hear your opinion on what the Winnipeg Jets should do with their pending unrestricted free agents. We know the guys' names. It's Jokinen and it's Setoguchi. I think that now that they re-signed Mark Stewart,
Thorburn,
sure, he's in the question there. So we want to hear from you about what the Jets should do with their pending unrestricted free agents. And that also includes head coach Paul Maurice. He's a pending unrestricted free agent, as it were. But so we want to hear from you. Coming up 2:15, get your opinions ready, and we'll open up the phone lines coming at 2:15.
Two more to get less notoriety would be Adam Party on the back end, and sure, then Al Montoya between the pipes.
That's right. Adam Party and Al Montoya, everybody's favorite. Much like the backup quarterback of whatever football team, everybody's favorite player is always the backup goaltender as well.
You got to throw in Michael Frolik, too. He's an RFA. Richie wrote a really good article, I believe that was about 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, explaining what he thought Frolik was worth. So Frolik is also in there as far as how many years do you think the Jets should sign Frolik to. I think we all expect Frolik to be re-signed, you know, based on his friendship with Andre Pavlik. I think that alone, his willingness, I think, because of that close friendship, and I think from all accounts, Frolik likes playing here, and he's liked the role. He's playing first line right wing. He probably wouldn't get that on many teams, right? And he's doing a really good job, and he's versatile. So that's another player that you can let us know what you think about that.
We can tweet out that article on our Twitter, the Frolik article about the we estimate his value to be. You know, at the end of the day, he's more of a third line winger, I think, but he's playing a first line role, as he mentions. He's elevated to a role he probably is happy with. Of course, who wouldn't want to play on the first line of a National Hockey League team? And, you know, there are some interesting decisions to be made. So I'm interested to hear, and all of us are interested to hear, what the people think should be done with some of these free agents.
That's exactly right. That'll come up again at the 2:15 hour after we hear from Frank Provenzano. He's still to come on the show coming up at 2 o'clock. And, of course, in the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to hear from Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch to talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Great story.
The Blue Jackets?
I think if they got in, I don't know if they're going to get in because it's going to be a dogfight up until the last second, but the Columbus Blue Jackets, just to have teams, I think, that haven't been in the playoffs a lot, I think is good, and it's nice to see because the Columbus Blue Jackets, they haven't been a team that's really been in a playoff position. They've kind of hung around the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings. Not the bottom, but kind of the top of the bottom, if you want to look at it like that. So it's a nice story with all of the changes and Kekalainen coming in there, and so, you know, Horton's back healthy and he's playing well. So I'm a big fan of that Columbus Blue Jackets team.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting team. Quickly, Drew, I know we're up against it here, but it is an interesting team, giving San Jose trouble the other night. Elevating themselves into third in the in their division right now, facing off against a Rangers team that has a lot of ties, of course, to the Blue Jackets with the trades that they've made. And you look at some of the players that they're that are on their roster right now, and they're dealing with some injuries. So I mean, you look at the back end and some injuries there, and they've added Nick Schultz to help with the secure the back end, and Ryan Murray out right now. So it's a nice group that is unassuming, but it's tough to play against.
Let's head to break. When we come back on the other side, we'll talk more about head coach Paul Maurice, his future with the Winnipeg Jets, and audio from today's Jets practice at the MTS Center. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. This segment of the show is brought to you by CompuStitch Embroidery Design, serving Winnipeg and surrounding areas for over 15 years. No matter the size of the job, small or large, CompuStitch Embroidery Design provides expert attention to customers' needs. CompuStitch Embroidery Design, keeping you in stitches since 1996, the official sponsor of the Illegal Curve game-winning goal and Illegal Curve 50-50 contests, located at 51 St. Anne's Road, You can also contact them by phone at 943-9415.
I'm going to say something about CompuStitch, a new sponsor of ours who have been, obviously, you mentioned it, making the toques for a long time. These toques, they're on a little bit of a back order because, as people who don't know, Dave Manuk orders the toques and from CompuStitch, and we get people at like, there's so many people that have won these toques. We get people come up to us at the MTS Center, and they say, where are these toques? It's unbelievable. I think there's like 30 toques waiting to be handed out. So if you are a winner, you're going to get your toque. But again, we are happy that CompuStitch is a new sponsor of ours.
Exactly right. Paul Maurice, Winnipeg Jets head coach, met with the assembled media at the MTS Center a little bit ago. We'll bring you some of that audio now, of course, after talking about the Dallas Stars ahead of tomorrow night's game against between the Jets and the Stars. Game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Here is Paul Maurice talking about the Dallas Stars.
They've gotten to their style of game. They've gotten to their identity. So kind of a more muscular version in some ways of the Rangers. They've got some speed up front. Clearly, you got two guys in the 60s with points. That's going to make all other parts of your game feel better about itself. Their goaltending, while they've had some injuries, is usually pretty solid and much, maybe a little bit like Colorado in that they've protected that back end and worked better as a group of five. They're quick and they move the puck really well. And then especially in that game against St. Louis, I really impressed with how they went from tape to tape at high speed up and down the ice. They're able to do that. So some of what we saw against the Rangers last night, you're going to see on the ice tomorrow with how they move the puck, how they transition.
What we spoke about in the first hour of the show, you know, quick team through transition. You can't let them have the speed through the neutral zone because you're asking for trouble if they can hit the blue line with speed with the puck and your defense are on their heels.
And you're talking about, you know, we talked about the size difference. And yeah, I mean, you know, Ben's a bigger guy and Sagan a little bit bigger than some of the guys in the Rangers in terms of physicality. And some of the Dallas guys will muck it up more. Rangers have more overall skill, I think, top to bottom. Dallas has probably as good top end as you're going to find right now.
Here's Paul Maurice talking about the importance of tomorrow night's game, given that the Jets are chasing the Dallas Stars for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference.
This is our chance to get back into the fight here. You know, we did something exceptionally special to close a gap, and I don't think any team in NHL history has closed that gap and then stumbled. And now we got a chance to keep breathing, get your head up close to the surface so you can see a little light coming. And it's such a great process for our guys to go through to feel the weight of that and to get up for a hockey game and be excited for it and take on that challenge. I'm looking forward to seeing how they react to it.
That's been concerning for me. And he talks about, you know, needing the players to react to the magnitude of the game.
Well, I mean, it's not like they haven't been in the race the past 2 years, though, like in some form.
Yeah, I mean, last year it literally went down to the last game, last regular season home game. I mean, that was the game against Montreal where they ended up losing. But in the second intermission of that game against Montreal last season, they were tied with the Habs, and then the Rangers ended up beating the Hurricanes, which clinched the playoff, which eliminated the Jets, and then they came out flat in that third period against the Habs. So, you know, it certainly did come right down to the wire last year.
Yeah, it's not new.
No, it's not brand new. This is a team that has some experience with playing, but last 2 weeks, I mean, they had that flounder last year right at this core time. You can't lose six games in a row in the NHL.
It's hard to lose six games in a row. It's hard. Like, it's hard to lose six games in a row in the NHL with the way they handle points.
Right, and if you do that several occasions in a season, you're most likely not going to make the playoffs because of the fact that you lose all of those points. And so Paul Maurice is going to have to motivate them in different ways. He mentioned, you know, they have to kind of get their head above water so they can start to see where the playoffs are again. And that's really what tomorrow's game is about. It's not, you're not just playing for pride. You're playing to win the games. And they still have to compete. And because you're still playing, you know, Richie mentioned, you are essentially playing for next year in the sense that you're trying to finish strong. For this team right now, it's about finishing strong. It's about winning games so you end the season on a positive note. Because we know that the task of making the playoffs for the Jets right now is next to impossible. Because they'll probably have to win 95% of their games.
Yeah, don't talk about injuries. Look at Dallas' injuries right now.
Sure. significant. One of the most disconcerting things for Winnipeg Jets fans is that they've lost a number of these games in the six-game losing streak against non-playoff teams, specifically the Islanders, the Senators, the Canucks right now. Here's Paul Maurice on the difference between playing against playoff and non-playoff teams.
Here's the difference in those games. The teams that are just having fun, you start out of the gate with a different pressure in your room. Dallas Calgary last night at home, 3-1 lead in the third. There's some tough questions being asked today, right? So there's the weight in that room today. So they're not sitting there, geez, we just gave a point to Winnipeg. They're going Phoenix is now up two. So they're carrying a heavy weight there. The top end teams, some of them are fighting for that President's Trophy. Some of them, as you get closer, are going to just want to make sure they get through this healthy. But they're in the playoffs because they got some high end players there. So there's advantages and pressures to every game now played, and to make it, you're going to have to overcome those pressures.
Pressure, there's pressure, but you got to go out there and you got to perform with the effort necessary each and every game.
You're certainly well aware of what's going on in the league. I think that's one thing Paul Maurice seems to be a good thing that he's, when he came into the job, he was following it closely from the TSN studios, and obviously went over to the KHL, and he's an avid hockey follower. Not all most of the coaches are, don't get me wrong, but I like the fact that he's always aware of what's going on.
I think you're right, though, Richie. I think there are some more than others that don't necessarily follow teams, but are aware of what other teams are going on. And you kind of saw that with Alain Vigneault and John Tortorella. I thought that John Tortorella wasn't as familiar with the Western Conference teams, and Alain Vigneault wasn't as familiar with the Eastern Conference teams. That has to do a lot with the lockout year, by the way, and the fact that they didn't
That's
see
exactly.
any of those teams, right?
Point, yeah.
But you are right. Paul Maurice was following every team because he was doing analysis for TSN, and you look at, and going back to the clip we played at the beginning of the segment, him talking about the Dallas Stars are where they want to be, finding their identity, and he's talked a lot about the Jets still trying to get there, and it's right, because we've seen the team have a lot of difficulty with pressure here, because this has been... This, you want to talk about pressure, this homestand here after the Olympics, where all these home games, 8 of the first 10 games coming out of the Olympic break were at home, that's where you had to make up the ground. You had to not only get some wins, but you had to stay there with Dallas, because they were neck and neck 2 weeks ago, because you knew that road trip was coming up. And you lose a lot of points there, and it puts you in a situation, again, like we talked about, where it's going to be next to impossible to make the playoffs. They're not mathematically out, but they're probably going to have to win 12 of 14, something like that. And it's almost impossible to do that.
In case you missed it, Andre Pavlik is injured, left the game after the first period last night. He's got a lower body injury and at least won't play the next two games. Al Montoya is going to be the goaltender tomorrow night for the Winnipeg Jets. Here's Al Montoya talking about what you have to prove every time you step on the ice.
I think every time I step on the ice, I'm trying to prove something, whether it's to myself or to management or around the league. So every time you step on that ice, you get a chance to showcase yourself and give your team a chance, and I think it all takes care of itself.
You know, there's been the clamoring of Jets fans for, really, I mean, almost the majority of this year, saying Pavlik's not good enough to be the guy. And now, thanks to injury, you know, Montoya's got at least a couple games to prove that he can be, you know, what Jets fans seem to envision him being, which is this otherworldly goaltender. I mean...
Well, I don't know if they envision him being an otherworldly goaltender. I think if you look at Al Montoya's numbers this year, they're respectable. They're above average. If you compare all goaltenders, I think he, and I've said this all along, I've said that he's a very good NHL backup goalie. And I have absolutely no problem with the Jets re-signing Al Montoya again. Whether he is a good enough goalie at this stage of his career to be a number one goaltender, I'm less confident about that. So
I don't know if you resign him if that's the way you feel, though. Different conversation for a different day. But just pointing that out.
The conversation for the offseason, which could start after tomorrow night if they don't win against Dallas.
I've always said that I think Montoya should play more. But as far as saying that he is an otherworldly goaltender, I have a lot of respect for him, and I think he's done a good job. Two shutouts this year, he's a winning record, his save percentage, and all that, all those good numbers that you look at for goaltenders, they're good numbers. it's just a question of, do they want to sign him again to a backup role, or do they want to bring someone in to compete and push Pavlik for the number one spot? I think there's, we fixate so much on one goaltenders and all that. The reality is, you want to have two guys, and again, a perfect example is Rito Berra in Colorado with Varlamov. There's no problem having a, or Peter Budaj in Montreal. There's no problem having a guy as a permanent backup. But as Richie mentioned, is that what you want to have with Andre Pavlik's struggles? I think that's what you're saying, right?
That's right.
Do you want to bring in a guy like a James Reimer who might push him, and Reimer might become the number one goalie? 1A, 1B situation.
That'd be more my opinion on it, you know, going down that route. Pavlik's save percentage, by the way, and after Maurice has been hired, prior to last night, I haven't calculated based on last night. It's been 915.
Yeah.
So
that's middle of the line. That's a middle kind of goalie.
Yeah, that's gonna be the top 30 in the National Hockey League. So yeah. I mean, again, it's the bottom third as we've talked about with him throughout. I think that's more kind of what he is. So the question is, you know, we've talked about it before, whether he can take the next step. And I think you can't keep asking that question anymore. You have to have somebody else in here if you're not going to make that change, which I don't think they necessarily need to make. But I think they need to bring in a guy. You know, you need to do a Reimer. You need to do a Reimer Bernier thing.
Sure.
They don't have a Bernier, but you need to do one of those things where you let him battle and go.
Right.
You don't just give it to him and give him a carte blanche there.
First 30 games, you know, put up or shut up, and whichever one of you puts up is the one who's going to get the job.
Yes, exactly.
One player on the Winnipeg Jets who I think most people would say have been reasonably pleased with his effort level over the last six games, despite the six-game losing streak, is Blake Wheeler. I think he's been probably one of the better Jets forwards.
I mean, he hasn't popped a goal. He's got one goal in 12 games, I think it is.
Yeah, 13, I think.
Struggling putting
one
the puck in
his last
in
13, but yeah, I know he's been engaged. I mean, that's one of those things where, you know, Kane has had one goal in, or hasn't scored in 11 games. There's been times where he's been engaged as well. There's been times where the problem is Kane doesn't create for others as well as Wheeler does, so that causes issues. Setoguchi is 1-12. He's just been awful this year. So
he's been what he's been all year.
Yeah.
Here's Blake Wheeler on tomorrow night's game. We have to win.
No, it's a big one. You know, we need to start winning games. And you know, when you're playing the team that occupies the position you want to be in, it definitely carries a little bit more weight. So you know, I think, like I said, it's an exciting game, and you know, you want to be playing big games this time of the year, and we're in that position, so it's gonna be a big one tomorrow.
That's Wheeler. I mean, the Jets know. They know in the dressing room how important tomorrow night's game is. The question is, are they able to, you know, respond accordingly? And I think they're going to come out strong tomorrow. The question is, are they able to come out strong and then maintain that through 60 minutes of action?
Yeah, well, you know, back on Wheeler for a second, though. I mean, you know, the guy's engages certainly creates some nice speed down the wing, especially on the left side for a right winger, and they've been trying to do that more, if I've noticed.
He seems to have one or two rushes. Sorry to cut you off, Richie. He seems to have one or two rushes. Like, I think he doesn't get enough credit for how he accelerates. He has to, like, he's a big guy, right? He's 6'5". That's one of the reasons why he made the Olympic team, but I don't think he gets enough credit for doing that. He seems to have one or two rushes every game. He hasn't been able to score, as you said, once in the last 13 games, but he creates offense. He's not sitting back. These are the guys that are counted on for the goals, the Wheelers and the Canes. And, you know, Andrew Ladd, you can't criticize him at all. He's been scoring. So, I mean, it's unfortunate that has been, you know, bugging him a little bit. But I have no problem with the way he's played at all, not only in the last stretch, but throughout the whole year. I've been pretty happy with his play.
And Wheeler's on pace for 63 points this year, which I would say would be a bit of a letdown. I would have, you know, I thought it would have been a successful year for the bigger contract now to get to that 70-point level. I thought, you know, he did have.
Remember that slow start, the first.
Yeah, but
first,
I mean, little start, you know, of the season. They all count.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I'm just saying, you know,
he certainly had some nice spurts, but you know, overall for output from your top guys, you like to be able to have one guy eclipse this to reach the 70-point plateau. I don't think this year any of them will do it. I mean, Little right now is 54 points. So I don't think anybody in this team is going to be getting 16 points in the next 14 games.
That would be a hot streak.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, that's another thing, too. Just overall top-end production. Sagan, Ben.
That's right.
None of those here.
Before we go to break, one final clip. Here's Blake Wheeler on Al Montoya and Al Montoya's ability to steal a game as the goaltender.
Well, he's stolen some games for us, you know. There's been games where we didn't have any business being in or any business winning, and he's held us in, and you know, we found ways to win those games. So I think he's capable of doing that. I think you know, it's an opportunity for him to get a little bit more action, you know, on a night to night basis. And I think he's he's been working for that, and he's earned that. So you know, it's never easy when you lose guys. Paz has been great for us lately, and you know, if we're gonna miss him, it's nice to have an option like Monty to step in and fill that void.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website, of course, is IllegalCurve.com. We have all your Winnipeg Jets news available there. One of the big questions now, Richard, that has sort of developed over this six-game losing streak is the future of head coach Paul Maurice. And when he was, you know, hired by the Jets, he was hired until the end of the season with the agreement being that the Jets and Maurice would reevaluate the situation in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you start your career as a Winnipeg Jets head coach with that, you know, 11-3-1 record or whatever exactly it was, and it was a no-brainer. Jets fans need to get him re-signed immediately. Now, since then, there's been six games in a row where, you know, they haven't performed up to their, you know, the previous standard that they had exhibited under him, and, you know, there's questions still about whether or not he's going to be around. He has family, obligations. His family lives in the Columbus area, so that certainly is a factor. And, you know, there's more questions now surrounding him as the future Winnipeg Jets head coach than there were, I would say, a month ago. And we're going to open up the phone lines at 2:15 so that you can get your opinion in on that if you want to see him back as the head coach. You know, what do you think? Is Paul Maurice going to be the head coach here next season?
Yeah, I think he will, Drew, but I mean, it's hard to say for sure. And the reason I say that is because the family factors that play in here, we're not privy to that, and we shouldn't be.
No,
frankly. It's going to be something that, you know, I thought when they brought him, it was a matter of just getting a 3-year deal locked up and he'd be here for 3 years after the end of the season, at minimum. I think if he wants to be back, he will be back. And I think it'll be a 3 or 4 year pact. Interesting to see that, you know, Cheveldayoff's at the end of year three here. I talked about this with Rick. We talked about this on Monday's post game, the Avalanche game. You know, if Maurice does come back, what about the term in the contract? Is it 3 years, a year less than Chevy has? Is it 4 years, a year equal to what Kevin Cheveldayoff has in his contract? That's kind of interesting. You could argue that a GM might have two coaching changes in his pocket per term, and then the third one, and everybody after two, somebody's you're pointing at that at the general manager as opposed to the coach. But I think Maurice is probably what they like. You know, he's a structured guy. He's not too risky, and I think you know what you're getting with Paul Maurice. And I think that kind of goes in line with what the Jets have done thus far in terms of the organization since they've returned.
And I think the results so far and the last six games, the Jets have not won a game, and they've only got points in two of those games.
Three, sorry.
And you have to look at what he's done since he's come over. And I know that, you know, you could say that the change brought a kind of more of a, not a desperation level, but I want to say more of a willingness to want to play for the coach. But he has brought in a style of play. Not a style of play so much, actually. More so just the way they play, I should say, and how they execute. And I think that they have played better defensively, and I think that you look at what he's done with the lines. Sure, it was under Claude Noel that Dustin Byfuglien was playing forward, but he kept him there and moving Michael Frolik, and it's pretty evident that Michael Frolik really works better with Andrew Ladd and Brian Little, and it allows you to put Blake Wheeler on a lower line. So I think that the results are really impressive, and you can't say that he hasn't done a good job. He really got the Jets. Obviously, the players play a huge role in that, but he came in here and he got the Jets back into the playoff race. When towards the end of Claude Noel's tenure, the Jets were not even really in the discussion for a playoff spot. Things were looking very grim, and Paul Maurice came along And he really got this team to start playing well. And sure, they've fallen off a little bit here, but I think that he deserves a contract extension. And I think that, you know, you look at some of the contracts that are signed now. Tort's got 5 years in Vancouver. I don't know that he would get 5 years, but I think
that's insane.
As Richie mentioned, I don't want to get you going on Tort's here, Richie.
That's not Mike Babcock.
Yeah, well, 5 years for a coach is still a long time. I think the standard now is more like, as Richie said, 3 or 4 years. And I think you want to see continuity. I think the Jets want to see continuity, and I think Paul Maurice would like to know at this stage of his career, because this is his third team that he's coaching, twice in Carolina, right? So in Toronto. So, I mean, he wants to see... you know, this is a situation where if he's going to move his family and he's going to make that decision, he'd like to know he's going to be here for 3-4 years. And absolutely, I've always respected Paul Maurice as a coach. I've always been a fan of his. I think he's extremely well-spoken. And I think, not that Claude Noel was good with the media, but I think Paul Maurice is different with the media. He's a little bit more...
He's more guarded.
Little more guarded, a little more direct. I think because he's had more experience, not only being on TSN on the panel, but just the experience with Toronto. The Toronto media, I mean, it's like jumping into a fire pit, right? It's just, you're just being constantly attacked by, in the Toronto media, there's about 400 of them. They're like killer bees. But, you know, Paul Maurice, I think it's really, I think, and again, this is, I don't have any personal knowledge of this, I would have to think that True North would like to give him a contract, and he's probably considering it. No, I'm not saying that's already happened. I'm saying that's probably what's going to happen, I would imagine.
If he determines that his, you know, being closer to family, or that his family obligations or family responsibilities, you know, can't enable him to take this job, it's too far away, whatever it may be, I don't know. If he makes that decision, is it a black mark on the organization? Is it a perceived problem?
No, I mean, at the end of the day, Drivett's family, it's not a perceived problem. If there was not that concern, and he was a single guy who didn't want to coach in Winnipeg after having the opportunity to coach for a few months, yeah, I'd be a little concerned. But he's got, what, 2-3 kids, I think he has, and a family in a different, in quite far away. And as far as I know, no direct flights to that city if he's near Columbus. So, I mean, you know, it's a bit of a trek to get back and to get back there.
Yeah, it's not easy. No. It's 2 flights.
Yeah, so, I mean, these are all factors, and that's most important to him, and as it should be. So, I wouldn't take it as a slight. But, you know, that's something that there needs to be a decision on that, though, after these few months, because what you can have, you know, with Brent Sutter is kind of the similar but a little bit different. After 2 years, Brent Sutter wanted to be closer to family, and understandably so, but then you go down a course with Brent Sutter, and then you have to change your course with a different coach again, and then that's a big transition. So you ideally want to have an answer, which I think, obviously, they will, because there's no contract at the end of this season, and not have it maybe reevaluated a year down the road or anything like that.
Well, we will want to hear from you coming up at the 2:15 hour. We want to hear your opinion on Paul Maurice. Do you want him back as the Winnipeg Jets head coach next season if you had your choice? In the meantime, we'll head to break, and when we come back, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.